Next up, as we continue our UFO extravaganza, Jim Marrs, The Alien Agenda. Jim, by the way, has written a new book called The Terror Conspiracy. We'll get him back for a full show on that. But The Alien Agenda is next on Coast to Coast AM. Jim Marrs is an award-winning journalist, has more than 30 years' experience with several Texas newspapers. In 1999, he began teaching a course on UFOs, perhaps one of the first university-level UFO courses in the nation. Jim also investigated the U.S. Army's remote viewing program 3 years before it was publicly acknowledged by the CIA and then produced Alien Agenda. In addition, his book, Rule by Secrecy, has been termed an underground bestseller, and Jim's latest book is called The Terror Conspiracy. Jim Marrs, back on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, it's always good to be with you.
My pleasure. Hey, what was it like teaching a university-level course on UFOs? Did the students love it? Did they cram for this thing? And how did they get credit for this thing?
Well, number one, it was through continuing education. Okay, they call it an enrichment program. And number two, it was quite interesting. I called it UFO investigations. I told them right off the bat, I said, don't expect me to just tell you with any 100% degree of certainty that this is this and they come from here and they're doing that. I said, this is an enigma, you know, wrapped in a mystery, but we're going to look into it. And what's really interesting is that on the courses I have, there's always probably maybe half the class who will admit to have having some sort of UFO experience. So they're there trying to figure out what it is that happened to them.
So here you are, Jim. You're a former newspaper reporter, editor, 30 years experience, crusty journalist, investigating UFOs. Did you face much ridicule in those days?
Oh, of course, and still do. You know, there's still a segment of the population that just, it doesn't fit into their paradigm, their worldview, so they just go, oh, no, that's not right, it's not right. But let me tell you this, let me tell your audience this. If you just out of hand dismiss the whole idea of UFOs, of non-human intelligence that's interacting with the Earth right now, then you will never be able to figure out what's really going on in the world because you're missing a big piece of the puzzle.
And this puzzle is so important. You're absolutely right, Jim. You know, when I'm out in the public just talking to people, you know, they originally talk of Coast to Coast as being, hey, it's that UFO show. Of course, that's changing a lot now. It's not just that, obviously.
Right.
But it's a perception of a lot of people. And, you know, those people who have listened to Coast for a long time have an appreciation of UFOs. They understand it. They know the merit of it. But people on the outside, those people who don't listen, there aren't that many anymore, they, you know, they don't quite understand it. They just don't get it. And is there anything we can do to get to them, or will they never understand it?
Well, you know, there's going to be a certain portion of the population. In the Army, we used to say there's always 2% that doesn't get the word, you know. And so there'll always be some slice of the population that a UFO could sit down right in front of them and spin around and blow steam or whatever, take off straight up, disappear, and they will still deny it. They'll say, oh, it was a hallucination, or I just ate a bad piece of meat or something, you know. They'll have an excuse. Because it just does not fit into their worldview. And I can appreciate that. And so I don't ever try to hit anybody over the head with it. You know, all you can do is, just like the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So what you do is you present the information. There it all is. My book, Alien Agenda, I'm sitting there looking at my bookshelf, and I've got copies in German, Spanish, Korean, Japanese, Dutch, Polish, Bulgarian.
Love it.
And so, you know, it's all over the place. That information's there for anybody that wants to go look at it. But just like it says in the Bible, seek the truth and you shall find it. Doesn't say turn on the TV and somebody's going to tell it to you. You got to go look for it and you got to think.
The title, basically tells us what this book is all about, but give us a little bit of the angle you went after.
Okay, well, there's been so many books written by UFO about UFOs all the way back into the 50s, and for anyone who's actually studied the literature, the question of are UFOs real, that's been settled. That was settled years ago, and today there's no question about it, because with the advent of the camcorder, now everybody all over the world has camcorders, and there's not a week goes by that somebody's not getting some really good pictures of the UFO. Now, that pretty well takes care of the old argument that they were just hallucinations or figments of somebody's imagination or some kind of mass psychosis. And you know, George, I always thought that was an interesting proposition, a mass psychosis, a heretofore undiagnosed, contagious, you know, psychosis. That's worth news stories right there, right?
It's like the bird flu.
Yeah, like bird flu, yeah. But you never hear anything about that because it's simply not true. There's something up there. There's something flying around. So what the question becomes, what is the alien agenda?
And I think when you look at the big picture nowadays, you begin to think, is it in cooperation with government? You know, Jim, you and I have talked about some conspiracies on this program before.
Right.
I'm almost at a point now to believe that there's something going on in tandem here, because these extraterrestrials, if they exist, I believe they do, would have come forward by now. They haven't. Sounds like they got some kind of a deal cut.
Yeah, and that seems to be the situation. I know you've had lots of guests on your show, people with inside information, people with military or intelligence backgrounds, and they all kind of have some varying stories, but the common denominator is that there has been contact, there has been some deals cut. The point I put forth in Alien Agenda is that you have to understand that when we talk about the government, there's the government and then there's the government. You know, it's just like after 9/11, we heard about the shadow government, okay? And they were getting those people to safety, never mind about the constitutional progression of an ascension to office. There are people, a wealthy elite that basically control this government because of their control over media and giant corporations. And these people owe their wealth and power and position to their monopolies over transportation, energy, pharmaceuticals. And so these people have a vested interest. They don't want us to know that there's other energy sources out there and other power plants and other technologies, because it might upset their monopolies. And so I think this is one of the fundamental reasons why that the lid has been put on the UFO issue. They don't care if we know there's aliens out there somewhere or wherever they come from, time travelers, dimensional travelers, non-human intelligence. They don't care we know that's out there. What they care about is if we know for certain that non-human intelligence is out there visiting our world, interacting occasionally, then we know for certain that there's alternative technologies out there, and that could prove a threat to their monopolies.
You've got a great article on your website, Jim, from August of 2004 about UFO secrecy, where you write about how the FBI always knew about it, always investigated it, always kept files on it. Probably one of the reasons why the television show X-Files was so successful.
Right. I think that was giving us a little bit of a peek behind the curtain and a little bit of view of what's really going on in there. And I happen to know that even up to this present day, both within the FBI and within the CIA and within other more secretive alphabet agencies, they have at least one person, maybe more, who keeps an eye on this whole topic. And they're not rolling their eyes and they're not snickering behind their hand. They are deadly serious in their quest for knowledge about what's really going on.
You know, I think nowadays with the fear of terrorism, this war in Iraq, and things that continue to affect all of us all the time, these roller coaster prices on oil, where they get them high enough and then they drop them enough where we're comfortable with it. But they're still
right before the holiday season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go shopping. Keep shopping.
Yeah. We'll raise them later. And I mean, it's amazing how all these things face us time and time again. Yet the big picture of so many things that are affecting us worldwide as well, it's right out there. And I think a serious look at UFO investigating is so critical now that people like you and Linda Moulton Howe and Stanton Friedman and others are starting to do. It's critical because I think the old days where, you know, you had the George Adamskys and whether he was picked up in a craft and taken around to Venus, I don't know. But that had the stigma of being, you know, hoaxy and funny. And nowadays, there's a serious attempt to get to the bottom of this, and I think that's important.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, George. And let's look at the progression that we've gone through. The national polls in the 1950s showed that the vast majority, I mean, we're talking 85, 95% of the population, totally disbelieved that there was any life outside the Earth. Today, it's almost the exact opposite. Most of the national polls show that 80, 90% of people say, yeah, I think there could be life out there. And so we've been in a conditioning process, and we now have been conditioned to accept the idea that, yeah, maybe that's going on. And look how our viewpoints have changed. In the 50s, the big question was, do they come from Mars or do they come from Venus? You know, and by the 60s and 70s, we had got a little more sophisticated, and it was, do they come from Zeta Reticula 4, or do they come from Alpha Centauri? And now, into the 90s and into the day, now we're even talking about, do they come from another dimension? Do they come from another time? And so I think slowly but surely, the human intellect is being kind of pulled up the ladder of progress, and I think we're beginning to get a little more sophisticated and hence a little more knowledgeable about what's really going on, at least for those who will pay attention and study the material.
On my most recent show, Joseph McMonagall was my guest, remote viewer, and he respects the work of Ingo Swann, which he claims is probably one of the best remote viewers. And Ingo wrote in his book, Penetration, how he remote viewed structures on the moon, alien structures, bases, facilities on the moon. And so I asked Joe, I said, Joe, now come on. You're telling me that Ingo Swann is the best remote viewer you know, that he worked with the government, you worked with the government. And so Ingo writes in his book, Penetration, that there are extraterrestrials, that there are structures on the moon, for example. I'm saying, so if you're telling me he's the best and that you respect him, you're telling me by that statement that his statement about all these things on the moon must be accurate, must be true. And he said, I believe it. I believe Ingo, and I don't think he'd lie. And that alone tells you something about this entire field. The fact that there could be structures on the moon, it's exciting, James. It's exciting.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. Again, I think we're in a conditioning process because when I was a young man and in college, you know, we were taught the moon is just this dead place. There's nothing there, you know, no air, no nothing. And then all of a sudden, though, over the years, we find out, well, it does have kind of some atmosphere. And oh, there's water on the moon. Water? Hello? And that these water vapors have been seen sweeping across the lunar surface. There's still so much about the moon that we don't know about. And this is something that's always bothered me, George. I don't know if it's bothered you, but I go back far enough before 1969 and the moon landing, we were told, oh, man, once we get to the moon, we're going to colonize, we're going to set up moon bases, we're going to mine minerals off the moon, and we'll get the space program to pay for itself, you know? Well, we went there six times, reportedly, and then even though we had 22 Atlas rockets waiting to go for more expeditions, we've never gone back.
Never gone back. And you know what? I'm not sure, even though they say we are, I'm not sure we will.
Or if we do, they'll keep putting it off. And I don't know. There's just, I'm waiting for them, for somebody. You know, there's now space shots being planned by the European Space Agency, yeah. by the Japanese, and even private corporations are now working towards moving into space. And I just can't wait for one of those to get up to the moon and take a good, clear, faraway orbiting picture of the moon lander sitting there. Okay? That should take care of the whole question about did we go to the moon?
Remember the old movie From the Earth to the Moon, where a modern-day astronaut group gets to the moon and they find a British flag, an old, tattered British flag,
yeah.
And we went to the moon in the 1800s. I think civilization was sophisticated enough, or maybe that's possible a million years ago.
It may be. My favorite is the Gayan Wilson cartoon that shows the spaceship approaching the moon, and you're looking at it from the backside of the moon. And on the backside of the moon, which I think probably at the time this cartoon came out, we had not really gotten photographs. We didn't know really what was on the backside of the moon. And it's all hollowed out, and there's a bunch of 2x4s and some scaffolding and everything in there, and a little sign says, Act 3, Scene 4.
I love it. What's your take, Jim, on the alien abduction phenomenon?
Well, you know, that's one of the hardest things for people to accept because it just sounds so outrageous. Plus, you know, you get to thinking about it. Hey, you can't even go to bed at night, you know, and not be safe from some weird creature coming in your room and taking you away. But the evidence for that, the widespread reports, the just thousands, basically, when you extrapolate it up. It's an amazing thing, and obviously there's something going on there. Now, what I found in researching for my book was really quite fascinating because up until then, I'd been reading the material of Bud Hopkins and others, and it all sounded pretty scary. And the whole concept, the whole word abduction, you know, that sounds very negative. Oh, man, who wants to be abducted? And, I mean, you know, if you go abduct another human, that's a crime. And so, but what I found out was that Dr. Jacobs and Bud Hopkins and these guys, they were offering a very, very worthwhile service by interviewing and talking with, commiserating with, and not putting any judgment on these people who came to them who had had a traumatic experience and wanted to know what had happened. What I found, George, which was so fascinating, is that there's a ton of people out there who have had the same experiences, but they do not necessarily look on it as a negative or traumatic experience. I had a woman tell me, she said, oh, I felt like I was an honored guest. And other people who say, oh, yeah, but of course, none of these people, including the people who've had bad experiences, none of them really want to face the ridicule and the snickers that they know they're going to get if they try to tell people about their abductions. And so it's really amazing that as many stories about abductions that are now on the books have come out. But there's two sides to the whole thing.
That's true. And I got to tell you, you know, I'm beginning to side with the people who have been abducted.
Right. I mean, obviously, something's happened to him. And I guess the big breakthrough was with the late Dr. John Mack. You know, he was a Harvard psychologist.
Oh, gosh, I wish he were still alive.
I know it. That was absolutely tragic. In fact, I immediately jumped on that thinking, uh-oh, maybe somebody took him out.
But well, you want to hear something even stranger? Listen to this. I have a dear friend of mine. He lives in Los Angeles. He's a psychiatrist. He's been studying the work of John Mack. I told him about a year ago. I said, you know what? We need a good medical expert psychiatrist to step in where John Mack left off.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started reading everything that John Mack has written, his stories, his reports. He's listened to Coast to Coast religiously. He calls me today, Jim, because I really believe he was going to go into that end of the field. He's a psychiatrist in L.A.
Right.
He calls me today. He had a heart attack.
God.
Has no idea what happened to himself. He's healing in a hospital right now. So that could be on the back burner. I mean, it's amazing. Sometimes you wonder if somebody's got their own agenda, Jim.
That after the break about how we can get more professional, credible people to come forward and start seriously addressing this issue.
Good point. And we'll open up the phone lines. Jim Marr's our guest. The Alien Agenda. Now's your chance to talk with him. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I want to let you know that our book, Worker in the Light, is available as an audiobook as well. Amazon.com has that. And then on November 17th, I am going to be on the Queen Mary ship in Long Beach, California. And I'm going to do the whole program there that Friday night on the 17th on that haunted ship. And then the next day, Saturday, the 18th at 1 p.m., those of you in that area, if you want to come on out there, we will be having a book signing for Worker in the Light. So that's all coming up in about 2 weeks or so right here. And I'll be back in Los Angeles in about the same time period. So we'll be right back with Jim Marrs and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Jim Marrs, our guest, will take your phone calls as well. Jim, have you ever had an opportunity, they have now both passed on, to talk to Betty or Barney Hill about their abduction case? I would have loved to have done that. I talked to the psychiatrist when I was a 21-year-old reporter back in Detroit, but I never had an opportunity to talk with them.
Unfortunately, I'm in the same position. By the time I was into it, Barney Hill had already passed away, and even though Betty kept making some of the conventions and stuff, I really never had the chance to talk with her. But I've talked with, you know, because she did put herself on the lecture circuit, I've had the opportunity to talk to many, many people who did meet her, and almost unanimously they were saying she was a very nice lady and very open and forthright. And of course, I've studied the Betty and Barney Hill case, and I'll tell you what really fascinates me about the Betty and Barney Hill case is that subsequent abductions right up to the day, the debunkers will say, oh, they just somehow picked up all this information from Star Wars or Star Trek or the literature, and that's why that they give the same description of the probes and the short grays and everything else. But Betty and Barney Hill was the very first. They did not have this reservoir of information to draw on. They simply told what happened to them.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, and there've got to be hundreds of Hills out there that have had this experience.
Right.
And they're major stories.
Yes, that's another thing too, and that's what I was mentioning earlier, is that you know, you've got probably get twice as much again of people who have had the same experiences, but they did not particularly perceive this as some sort of evil or or traumatic experience, and as a result, not wishing to face the ridicule, they've kept quiet. One of the things that was really interesting to me on the publication of my book, Alien Agenda, was that I had people who I'd known all my life who came up and said, hey, listen to what happened to me. And they would tell me some experience, you know, and I'd go, well, that's pretty incredible. You know, why didn't you, I've known you for so many years, why didn't you tell me about this? And the answer basically was always the same. Well, you know, I was afraid you wouldn't believe me. I was afraid you would laugh at me. Any of you that are listening to me right now, go the next time you're having a family reunion or a Christmas get-together and the whole family's there, you know, without any judgment, without even making a big deal about it, just say, hey, have any of you all ever experienced something very strange, you know, with things that are flying in the air or things that have landed? And you might be shocked and amazed. You, if you show that you're not going to place any judgment on that, that you're seriously interested, you're very likely to come up with a story.
Let's go to some calls. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Marrs on Coast to Coast.
Hi, this is John from Portland, Oregon.
Okay,
hey, John.
Sure.
Hi. I got a couple quick comments and a question. First of all, I saw a show that showed, I guess it was a picture from the space shuttle where a UFO was coming into Earth orbit, and all of a sudden a bright flash and some projectile was shot at it, and it took off right back the way it came.
Right. You're talking about the STS-48 space shuttle mission.
Right, and what that says to me is that we probably have something watching over us to keep, I don't know if it's the good guys are trying to keep the bad guys out or what. That was one point I had. The next thing is on the crop circles, they're becoming so dynamic and complex. I just don't see how two old guys with a board and a string can be making these things in the dead of night.
Especially since one of them's dead now.
Right, right. Okay, and the question I have is, we know by looking at our planet how much life we have here. And I guess it goes along the question of evolution. Some of these aliens, the ones that look like the grays, they sort of resemble bugs, like a praying mantis head. Mm-hmm. And apparently they communicate telepathically. It makes me wonder if they didn't evolve from an insect. I mean, it's like the hive theory, how they communicate, you know, through their eyes or their minds. They don't use a verbal language, at least to humans. And I was wondering what your take on that was.
Right. If you've seen my prize-winning video, The Secret of Red Gate, you'll find that this woman that participates in that production, she remembered when she was a young girl in Montana going out in the woods and meeting her little gray friends. But at one point, she was apparently taken up in some sort of craft, and she still recalls this what she called the grasshopper lady. But, of course, she's grown now, and she explained this by saying that in Montana they didn't have praying mantises, so she remembers her as the grasshopper lady. But after seeing some of the artist renditions of what people have described as this praying mantis type creature, she said, well, that's what I saw. But it's interesting because she did not have in her repertoire the name of praying mantis, so she called it a grasshopper lady. And again, the commonality of these descriptions it's either one of two things. Either they're actually describing a real living entity that they had some sort of relationship with, or they are, again, passing on some kind of contagious mass psychosis in that they're repeating the descriptions of many, many other people who the odds are they've had no opportunity to hear from. So it's really a fascinating topic.
All right, let's go to our next caller. First time caller line, you're on the air with Jim Mars on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, please.
How you doing, George?
I'm doing
Jim?
Fine, thanks.
My question is pretty simple and straightforward. How come other countries, reputable countries, don't come out with proof to their people? You know, I mean, there's a lot of rival countries out there, and we'd be pretty arrogant as Americans to think we were the only ones that were getting visited. I mean, Russia and, say, China, just for example, they have nuclear weapons, and I hear that sort of attracts, you know, aliens or UFOs. So that would make big news here. Our media is no friend to our government, so you would think we'd hear about it the second they made even one mention of it.
Well, you would think that, but unfortunately that's not the case. As a matter of fact, other countries have been much more forthright about the reality of UFOs than the United States. Mexico has had incredible sightings over many, many years. They've even discussed it. A few years back, the Mexican Secretary of Defense actually showed on primetime television down there some gun camera film from some pilots who had chased UFOs and said, yeah, we don't know what these things are. Here it is. The French, a few years ago, produced the Cometa report, which, although they were quick to say this is not an official government report, nevertheless, the people who put this report together were all present or former government officials, and they said it's all very real, and these are aliens from another planet. It's been out all over the place. And Russia, during the Cold War, everything was secrecy, and yes, we got very, very little out of Russia. But once the communism collapsed and the Berlin Wall went down, ever since then, there's just been an avalanche of UFO material flowing out of Russia. The problem is not other countries, and the problem is not the phenomena. The problem is that our corporate mass media is either under a self-imposed censorship or, more probably, a censorship from some very, very powerful people, and they simply will not report this information.
You know, if it's censorship from government to major media, I think it's probably executive to executive, Jim. The hard busting reporter, the tough news director at a station, probably hasn't gone to that level. I don't think they've approached that person.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. In fact, in my experience, and I've done dozens and dozens of interviews, including BBC. I've got an interview coming up with a Swedish TV network. I've done Mexican interviews. I've done Japanese. And what's interesting is that they come, and then, of course, a whole ton of interviews with our own media, both local here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and then some nationwide. And what gets me is that they always come with a crew, okay? They got a cameraman, they got a light man, they got a sound man. And as we're talking off camera, invariably one of them says, well, listen to what happened to me, and they tell me some enthralling UFO story, and yet when these things get edited and placed in the media, assuming they even get in there, then it's always, well, it could be this, it could be that, you know, like, we don't know, and we don't know if there's any reality here. And yet the crews that come with these news people, they talk about it openly, and they're into it. They understand. Isn't that incredible?
I love it. First time caller line. Go ahead. You got another follow-up there?
Okay. It's really amazing that we could get censored like that. There's a lot of rogue, you know, a lot of rogue people out there that just say, I will not be told what to do. You would think we would get that kind of media out here, but
I guess we
have to go to other countries with
right.
that.
You would think that, but having worked in the media, let me tell you something. If you're the lowly reporter, whether you're radio, TV, or print, and you go to your editors and you say, I got a great story here, and they go, nah, never mind. You learn pretty quick just not to even take them any of this stuff. Let me give you a classic example on what I'm talking about here. And I'm not going to mention names or networks, but there was a fella who was worked for one of the major TV networks, and his job was on the weekend to take all the feed that came into the network from the affiliates and then decide which merited national exposure, and then he would turn around and put that on the network feed back to all the affiliates across the country. And he said there were only two types of stories that he was required to have prior approval on before he could put it on the wire, and one of those was terrorism. Okay, I can kind of understand that. We don't want to give away any of our security secrets, and we don't want to panic the public with, terrorist stories that maybe turn out not to be true or whatever. But he said most of those stories came back, and occasionally they'd say, hey, downplay this or leave that little piece out or whatever, but they always came back. He said the other type of story was anything dealing with UFOs, and he said, those stories never came back. And that's why you don't hear about any of this in the corporate mass media. And as George said, it is pressure from the very, very top.
If extraterrestrials came down here, Jim, and came up to you and said, we're going to allow you to come with us, we'll bring you back, 50 Earth years would have gone by the time you come back, but we're going to show you around the universe. We're going to show you other planets, other civilizations. Would you go?
Damn
knowing
right.
that no, you would. Knowing that when you come back, everyone you care about is gone.
That's true, but my daughters are grown. They're off on their own. I would probably ask, can I take my wife, you know? But but even then, if they said no, I've lived a pretty good, full, eventful, and fun life, and I think that would be the perfect capper. I'd probably go, well, okay, I'll go anyway.
You know, as tough as it would be for me to turn them down, I think I'd stay on the planet.
Why is that, George?
You know, all my life, I've wanted to know about extraterrestrials, Jim. All my life, I've wanted to travel to other planets. And I think when it comes down to it now, at this point, 56 years old, with the people you care about, I don't think I'd want to leave that. Even for the ability of seeing something that I've wanted to see all my life. Strange. Funny.
No, that's not so strange. I can actually understand that. The thing that led me into the work that I'm into is I always want to know what's going on. What's the deal? What's the truth, you know? And for the opportunity to find that out, I'd probably go, even if they said, okay, listen, we're going to take you and show you the universe, and no harm will come to you, but you can never come back. You know, I'd have to give that serious consideration, but I think maybe I'd go, okay. But, of course, that's at this late stage of life. If I was in my 20s or 30s and I had a family and I had young kids that I was responsible for, my answer would probably be different.
Well, I figure I've got about 9 more years here to do Coast to Coast. That'll put me at 65. I'm going past 2012 now. I decided to do that and to keep going.
You've got to find
beyond.
Out how it comes out, right?
Absolutely. And I want them to take me out in a gurney before I leave this show. So I figure if you go, and by the time I get off the air, we will probably have a year or two where you'll be able to send me some video from wherever you are anyway.
That's right. Well, look, I'll tell you what, if they ever take me off somewhere, George, I'll be sure and try to get a message back to you.
Let's go to our final caller, Wildcard Line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Go ahead,
Good.
Please.
It's an honor to speak to you and to Jim Mars. Got a question for Jim about his book, Rule by Secrecy.
Uh-huh.
And it's also about reptilians. In the chapter, All Roads Lead to Sumer, you kind of make like an ending argument about the reptile kings, how those controllers who are secretly controlling the world now are either trying to contact the reptile kings or have already contacted them and are working on their behest, or they actually are the reptile kings in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
And that struck me very heavily, and I've never heard it mentioned anywhere else. I was wondering if you might elaborate on that and also talk about any possible connections between the reptilian aliens, which people so often report.
Great. 2 minutes to go, Jim.
Okay, I'll try to make it brief then. Yes, there are reports back through various legends, through various cultures, and even into the ancient Sumerian tablets, which are still in existence and predate the Bible by like maybe 4,000 years at least. And they talk about the Shining Ones and the ones who came from the heavens to the earth. And so there is something there. And then when you begin to study, if you would study the Sumerian mythology, you can find the stories in the Encyclopedia Britannica. The only thing that's happening recently is nobody's really arguing with the translation. They're beginning to say, look, these tablets, many of them were translated in the 1800s. And at that time, those people had no concept of heavier-than-air flight, much less space flight, much less cloning or DNA manipulation. They didn't even know what DNA was. And so they chalked it all up to mythology. And there's a growing number of scholars who are saying maybe this is not mythology. Maybe they are telling us what they knew to be the truth and what was going on in these very, very ancient times. And as the caller said, when you study this material and find out that they have created kingships on the earth and people to kind of guide and lead the human herd, possibly hybrids, and you consider the interest, fascination with bloodlines, starting with the pharaohs, the Caesars, even up through Hitler and the Nazis, then you have to ask yourself, you know, are these ruling elite in the world today, are they trying to reach these ancient gods, or have they already been in contact with them and they're either being used or willingly cooperating with them, or perhaps maybe they are these ancient reptilian gods as mentioned in the literature.
Jim Mars, thank you so much. We got to get you back for the terror conspiracy, okay?
You bet.
We'll be back in a moment with a brief mention with Dr. Roger Lear, implants. He's going to be a guest of Arts on Saturday, and then 2 hours of strange open lines.